T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Assessing a person's legal matter often requires extensive interviews, review of contracts and documents, and research of the current state of the law on the issues involved. As a result, the information provided by the attorneys and guests of All Things Legal is given for informational purposes only. It is not to be construed as legal, tax, investment, or other professional advice. Communications with the attorneys on this program, whether verbal or digital, do not create an attorney-client relationship.
Hey, we're back. Hour number two, Doug Cesari, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, All Things Legal, and WWLAMFM.com. We'll be on till 10 o'clock, back on a regular schedule. And
We got a text. Somebody texted, can you recommend a super med mal attorney locally? I live on the North Shore. Not sure of your issue. If you can call us at the office, 837-1304. We can chat about it. But I did talk to a guy who we refer a lot of our med mal stuff to, and he basically said that in St. Tammany Parish, he was talking to a judge over there who'd been on the bench more than 10 years, and he said that in all the med mal cases that he's tried, he has never seen a verdict in favor of the plaintiff and against the doctor.
Well, doesn't mean it won't happen, but it's just
rough. It doesn't mean
it.
I'm just saying that in that particular jurisdiction,
it's just rough.
That's what you're going to be up against. And so the case is going to have to be pretty clear for a med mal attorney, because, you know, we had Kerry Wicker on the show. Kerry does a lot of that stuff over on this side of the lake. And he said that's one of the problems, is that these cases are so expensive because you've got to pay experts and it's very intense medical records, and you've got to hire somebody usually to go through and summarize those records, and the cost of the records are
usually expensive.
And
they have a cap on damages.
There's a cap on damages, so it's a tough thing. And then if you're in a jurisdiction that's really reluctant to rule in favor of the plaintiff, then it makes it even that much harder. Not to say you don't have a case, but, you know, call and chat about it.
You have to assess as lawyers, you know, what the C's are. Like whether the C's are favorable.
Correct.
Or they're unfavorable.
Correct.
When you're trying to sail the ship.
And, exactly.
So, I mean, basically, for 1 minute, a medical malpractice is a little different than with negligence. You have to show that the doctor breached a standard of care of the industry.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I'm going to say this without empathy and compassion, okay? So I apologize in advance. But just because you get a bad result from a surgery doesn't mean you have a medical malpractice claim.
Correct.
It means they had to do something
It fell below the standard of care.
The doctors in that particular field recommend not doing. So,
right.
So a lot of times it's just like a football game.
Well,
it's like being a football. You can call the right plays and you still have a bad result.
Sure.
And sort of medical malpractice is sort of the same way. The doctors get in and say, look, I called the right plays. I just had a bad result. And then there's no liability,
And there's a waiver and consent form where, look, this could happen. You could result in death. You could result in this. And there's a big old long consent form saying these things have happened across the country with this type of surgery. And so it doesn't mean I did anything wrong as a doctor. It just means that this is a possibility and you're consenting that this may happen to you.
Now, on the doctor's side, I find, this is generally, doctors who have a good bedside manner probably avoid this issue for them a lot of the times. In other words, if you go in there and do some type of diagnostic testing or something, and they, you know, something happens that's not supposed to, you say, hey, look, you know, this is what happened. We don't like for this to happen, but we're going to take good care of you, and we're going to make sure you get better. A lot of times, if you have that interaction with the doctor,
it keeps
the doctor out of the gray area where
it's one of those things that just happened. It's a risky surgery, and this is one of the risks.
All right.
Yeah, we got a phone call.
Got a phone call about a general contractor. Hey, Albert.
How you doing?
Good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah,
yes.
You are. What you got for us, Albert? The other Albert, telephone Albert.
What can you do to be certain that the general contractor will have a liability?
Wait, you're breaking up a little bit on us. I'm sorry?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
A little bit.
Can you hear me?
Yes. Yeah.
What can you do as a consumer to be sure that the general contractor will have
a liability? Yeah, look, do me a favor. Call back. We might get a better connection.
But what I think he's doing is, how can you make sure that the general contractor is properly insured if he's working on your house?
Well,
that's what I think he asked.
Okay. You can ask to see his policy, and then it's going to be a question of interpreting it. And, you know, the lawyers have been fighting for years over those policies. But I will tell you this. A general liability policy only covers liability for damages resulting from poor workmanship. It does not cover poor workmanship. So the easiest way to explain this, if somebody builds a brick wall and the brick wall is crooked and the brick wall is in the wrong place, you don't have a claim against that person's insurance company for removing and replacing that brick wall. That's strictly workmanship. The insurance company is not there to indemnify you against the workmanship of that contractor. However, if that brick wall falls down on someone, or if the brick wall falls down and damages an existing portion of your property, then those damages will be covered. You've seen situations, even in a homeowner's situation, you know, where they have the pipes under the house that sag, and then all of a sudden they break, and then you have to have the pipes redone under the house. Well, those policies will cover the damages associated with that. So they're going to go in and dig it out and put hangers, et cetera, but they're not going to pay to run the plumbing because they're not in the business of making those repairs. You know, if somebody hangs your cabinets wrong, or they're crooked, or they're in the wrong place, you can sue the contractor, but their general liability coverage is not going to cover that because there were no damages sustained as a result of their work. And their workmanship.
They just didn't do the work.
They just didn't do it properly. So they're not there to ensure that the work was done properly. They're just there to ensure the damages. So that's one issue. And the other issue is, you know, now that the consumer knows, is aware of this particular exclusion we just talked about in the last hour, make sure that he has contracts with subcontractors. Make sure that every subcontractor on the job. I can give a list of things if you're, and we do that all the time when we'll have somebody look at our contract from the contractor's standpoint, and we'll represent the homeowner and say, look, this needs to be in the contract. This needs to be in the contract.
That's probably the best hour you could spend.
No question.
If you're going to do a renovation.
Right. Yeah, the other thing you want to do is obtain lien waivers, conditional lien waivers. So if you've got a plumber, and the plumber is does a rough in, okay, so and you as the contractor pay the plumber, okay, and you now say, okay, homeowner, you need to give me a portion of the total bill because I have to pay these people.
Get a lien
you
waiver.
You as the homeowner say, fine, give me the pay app. We'll attach it to this lien waiver, and we're going to have that plumber sign this lien waiver saying, I've been paid in full for the work so far. And that way those subcontractors can't come and put liens on your house after the work is completed.
I mean, in a recent trial we had for a business owner who was renovating his business after a disaster, I mean, among the many issues, one of the issues was the contract didn't have a specific time period to complete the job.
Mm-hmm.
So when he fired the contractor for taking too long, the judge is like, what's too long?
Right.
He said, I don't think it's too long. And he left it up to interpretation. Two, no lien waivers. So he paid the general contractor. General contractor didn't pay the subs or the suppliers, and they filed the lien. And
right,
you know, he's worried about paying twice.
Yeah, exactly.
So I mean, there's a lot to it.
There's a lot.
In fact, you know, on liens, you got that chart. Yeah, I showed you my chart. There's a big chart that it's very complicated stuff. And I have to go back to the chart constantly to say, okay, here's the time period for this, time period for that. And we do this.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's just complicated stuff, and it's good to know what you're dealing with before. It saves you a lot
Correct.
Of
well,
trouble.
Well, yeah,
in the
and if
end.
You're a material supplier, right? If you're a material supplier, you're going to have to send a notice to the owner and the contractor before you file a lien. You got to do that at least 10 days in advance. If you don't, your lien's no good.
It's done.
And so, I mean, you have to itemize your lien, and it has to be sufficiently itemized to show the credits and the payments and the work that was done. And if it's not, you're out.
Okay.
So there's a lot of technicalities to it that you really need to follow because it's strictly construed.
Minefields.
Yep.
You could step in. All right, let's go to a break. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. We're back. Doug Cinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll have a couple of texts. It says, good morning. Did you watch the AAF football game last night? I enjoyed it. I like the rules that they have. What's your thoughts? We talked a little bit about this in the first half. I like the rule changes.
Mm-hmm.
I think the NFL game has got a lot of too many committee meetings between plays. Is the way, stoppages in play.
Right.
It's just you need to compress the game and make it more continuity. And the NFL is like the Titanic. It's not going to turn, or you have to start turning that wheel before the ship will turn, about a couple of miles before you're ready to turn. But I think one of the things that the USFL, World League of American Football, have brought in some good rule changes to the NFL, which made the game better. And I hopefully they'll see how some of these work.
Well, and in this particular league, we talked about this earlier, there are no kickoffs. The balls are spotted at the 25-yard line. Two-point conversions, no extra points.
I like that. Love that.
Only five can blitz. You can't blitz more than five, so it's probably going to be a little more scoring, right? Instead of an onside kick, you put the ball at the 35 or 40-yard line, wherever you kick off from.
And it's fourth and 12.
And you line up for fourth and 12. It's basically the same
thing. I would love to have no extra points, or you push it back to maybe the 30-yard line and make it a long field goal.
Yeah.
Because
give you your choice. And then people are like, well, gee whiz, I got a kicker issue. He's missed a couple of field goals. I'm going for two.
You see, they shouldn't call it extra point. They should have called it an automatic point when it was at the 3-yard line, because it was never missed. It was just a formality. But
I got a hokey story about that. So my wife and I are driving to go pick up our dogs 15 years ago from place Andalusia, Alabama. We
the Jacksonville game.
We bought two dogs, and we're coming back, and we're listening to the Saints Jacksonville game.
How was that?
And all of a sudden,
Deuce was in on that play. It's Aaron Brooks.
No, this was the kickoff. No, they got a kick return. They run it back. The Saints needed an extra point.
It wasn't a kickoff.
No. This wasn't the Jacksonville. It might have been Cincinnati, but we're playing the game.
Okay.
Saints are losing. They come back. They score a touchdown. The other team scores a touchdown, goes up one. So the Saints have this miraculous play where they lateral it 10 times.
That was the Jacksonville game.
Okay, yeah.
That was the Jacksonville game.
So they lateral it 10 times. And then they score, and now they need an extra point to tie.
Right.
And Morton Anderson. Oh, no, it wasn't. It was
Carney.
John Carney. John Carney gets up there and misses the extra point.
Right, right. That was one of the great calls of Jim Henderson that was unforgettable.
No, yeah, well, so Deuce.
He was questioning the divinity of God after this extra point
right.
and everything. So
well,
I remember
and then Hokie's response was, and I can say it because Hokie said it on the air.
Wow.
He said the Saints are his good old country boy accent and logic. He said the Saints are the only team I know that can fall into a barrel of breasts and come out sucking their thumb. Let me tell you, I almost ran off
the road.
It's Sunday morning.
What are you talking about? I got people going to church with their kids, and you're talking about barrels of something.
This was something. Well, this,
I
was,
know.
This was said on Sunday afternoon.
That's right, but they wasn't going to. They were coming back from church.
It was hilarious.
All right, there.
Somebody
you go.
Texted Panthers
right.
game 2004.
In the FCC, right, Albert? I'll give you the home phone number later.
The Panthers game 2004. Was that the game?
It was the Jacksonville game.
In Jacksonville.
In 2003.
Yeah, I'm listening to it on the radio, so I didn't remember it quite that way. But
I
do remember the comment. It was pretty unforgettable.
All right. Yeah. So, we had a text also. Let me get off the barrel here. Let's.
Good old Hokie. May he rest in peace.
May he rest in peace. All right. We were talking about staying separated.
Mm-hmm.
You had to be separated if you file for divorce for 180 days before you can get divorced. If without children, or if you have children that are over 18, or 360 days if you have children that are 18, hadn't graduated from high school, or younger. And the text says, what is the penalty if you get caught lying about being separate for the amount of time that during the 180-day period or the 360-day period? And, actually, I will tell you this. Every once in a while, we'll get someone to say, can we just say we've been apart for 180 days or 360 days? Now, when that happens, I take my hands, I put them over my ears and said, you just didn't say that, and I'm going to pretend you didn't say that. And we're going to start this conversation all over again. But here's the practical problem of doing that, is that if you go in and say that, sign an affidavit, you've been separate and apart for 180 days, or you 360 days, and then you do a community property settlement, you do a title, you sell your property, and then you come back later and say, you know what, I really wasn't separated for 360 days, 180 days, I was just fibbing. Then it could actually annul the divorce.
Right.
So you could either be a bigamist if you got remarried, or you sold off this property and you got title issues. I mean, also you perjured yourself.
That's right.
So you can't do that. Yeah. So
you can be held in contempt of court. All kinds of things.
But it's complications on many, many dimensions. So you have to have lived separate and apart for 180 days or 360 days. If you're just lying about it, or you're just fibbing about it, it can come back and bite you.
And I can tell you, and I know I speak for Doug, we will never recommend that anyone misrepresent anything to the court. First of all, it's an unethical thing to do. And the second thing is, you're just begging for trouble. Begging for trouble. Something is going to happen down the road where it's not worth it at all to try to do that.
So don't do that. That's why I put my hands over my ears and said, you just didn't say that.
We're
not going to talk about all
exactly.
that. So, but anyway.
Yeah, so I guess I was severely corrected. And Doug, another text, it was 1st and 10, Aaron Brooks threw the pass.
I know.
Lateral, touchdown.
Jacksonville. Deuce wasn't on that. I think Deuce was, he made one of the laterals. Mm-hmm. Michael Lewis was on it. Aaron Brooks.
Who ended up scoring.
Who else was on it? Dante Stallpepper. Dante Stallworth.
Yeah.
That's Dante Stallpepper, according to Buddy Dick.
Yeah, right. Like Culpepper and Stallworth mixed together.
That's right. Dante Stallworth.
From the Beauvoirage.
Dante Stallpepper. okay. No, so it was that crew. And that actually.
But I will say, the Hokie line, I'm telling you, was one of his best. And I just laughed. I laughed and laughed.
Yes. So
it made the loss, took the sting out. It was hilarious.
I know. Another Sunday. Now, you got Dan listening. Dan's perked up right now.
Yeah, he's going to be calling in.
He's looking through his dirty joke book now right now, and he's going to call in about a half an hour and give us one because he thinks he's got open season now. All right, let's go to a CBS update, and let's go to local news, and I'll field the letter from the FCC, and we'll be right back after this brief timeout.
Plays along the line for the Saints to stay alive, pending the extra point by John Kearney.
And he missed.
No!
He missed the extra point wide right. Oh, my God. How could he do that? This one is over as John Kearney misses his first extra point of the season.
There we go. Jacksonville Jaguars, New Orleans Saints. David Patton caught the final lateral. Jerome Paython.
Jerome Paython
mm-hmm. caught the final lateral. Deuce made a great lateral on that. I think he might have made the last one when he was going down and he just sort of chunked it.
Right. Yeah.
And there you go.
There you go. Poor John.
2003.
John lived a half a block from us.
Oh, he was great.
His son was actually in school with my son, so we got to know him a little bit.
He's a kicker.
His wife are nice folks.
He's a kicker who may be in the conversation one day for the Hall of Fame. That's how good he was.
Yes, absolutely.
So all right. Now, okay, they had a question about.
Actually, his son, JT, I think his name is a kicker. Or JD, he's a kicker at Notre Dame.
Yes. That's where he kicked.
Exactly.
Notre Dame.
Exactly.
He kicked. I think he won the national championship under Lou Holtz.
All right. So I had a question for Doug during the break, because I never did understand. The only knowledge I have of divorce law, I mean, I understand separation and community property, those types of things for other purposes, but I don't do any divorce work. Doug does all that. Michelle does all that in our office. But I asked him, I said, I thought the whole permanent alimony thing is a thing of the past. And he kind of corrected me on
that. Well, actually, the law's still in place, but societal changes have made it a lot less applicable because of both spouses working. But basically, there's three prongs that you have to go through. One, the person asking, there's two types of spousal support. There's temporary spousal support or interim spousal support that's during the time of the divorce and a short period thereafter to maintain your lifestyle and keep continuity while you're divorcing. So you might have child support and you might have interim spousal support. Then there's permanent spousal support, which was final spousal support, which was once known as permanent alimony. And that's after you get divorced, and that's if you have to have three criteria in order to be able to be eligible to receive it. Is one, that person who is asking for final spousal support is free from legal fault. And there's a list of things about legal fault that you have to demonstrate. Number two is that basically there's a deficit.
I just learned too during the break that withholding sex is one aspect of legal fault.
It is.
So, I'm like,
Interesting. We'll discuss that issue at the midnight.
I'm thinking a bunch of men wrote that law, but go ahead.
Well, we'll discuss that issue at a midnight midnight version of All Things Legal on a Friday night. That would probably be more interesting then. And the second part is there's a need, meaning that basically there's a deficit between the money that's coming in for the spouse and the money that their expenses. And the third part is that the other spouse has the ability to pay the deficit between of that spouse who has the need. Now, it's a little more complicated than that, but that's what it is conceptually. Now, here's the other thing. We're talking about time periods for staying separate and apart. The reconciliation is always in play. If you reconcile no matter what is occurring, then you start to clock over. But there are certain exceptions to the 180-day period or 360-day period, is you can get an immediate divorce for certain actions such as adultery or physical or domestic violence. Now, the reality is a lot of times the time you get a trial date.
Right. You still got to go prove it.
Yeah. That time period is expended of 180 days and 360 days. Because a lot of times when you request a trial on that issue, you might not get it for 3 or 4 months. And by that time you have that trial date, the time period is already passed. So you just go
fault. So practically, it's almost not worth it.
So sometimes it is. But it's not as common. But and then, you know, even if you do ask for a permanent spousal support, you have to have a trial or a final spousal support, a trial to show that you're free from fault. And so then, you know, so that's the first step. And the second step is whether there's a need. And then the other ex-spouse has the ability to pay. That's the short version. But you see, we have societal changes right now whereby, you know, both spouses are working.
Right.
So a lot of times the need's not there.
Well, and that dovetails with something called the marital portion. In a succession situation, even if you have a prenuptial agreement, and you know, husband's got $20 million, wife's got nothing, and there's a prenup agreement, and husband dies and says, I'm leaving wife out of the will, I'm leaving it all to my kids.
Right.
The wife has a claim for what is called a marital portion. If she dies essentially poor in relation to his wealth, and the kind of standard number is about 5-1.
Yeah.
Then she would be entitled to a portion up to a fourth, or depending on the number of children, if it more children than that, than two, then she would have extra portion, actually more than three, she would have a fifth or a sixth or whatever the number of children are.
That's
little known that by spouses who kind of got left out in the cold with next to nothing. And there's some exceptions to that, whatever, but that's something to look into in the event that happens.
That's it, and that's sort of a squishy number. It's more of a subjective determination that has a lot of things in there. Let's go to Sam, but Sam is email.
Samantha, maybe.
Samantha, huh? Let's go to Sam. You and all things legal.
Hi.
Hi, Sam.
I had a partner for 37 years, mm-hmm. and she always assumed that here in Louisiana, everything would go to his sister, and that his sister would divide everything up through our children and me. And unfortunately, when he got ill, I ended up, they called the lawyer, and the lawyer was supposed to turn everything over to me so I could pay his bills, so I could settle everything before he passed away. Mm-hmm. And the lawyer waited for almost 9 months before he did the paperwork. And then when he showed up to do the paperwork, my husband, Manuel, died that night. And there was nothing we could do. I ended up having to pay for all his burial fees and all of his insurance and everything. And I still live in the house, and his family is allowing me to do that. But unfortunately,
so you were never married.
We were never married. Uh-huh. No. And my Manuel always thought that everything would go to his sister, and she would take care of everything right. for him.
What about, now, do you have children together?
We have three.
Yes.
Unfortunately, he has three other biological sisters who are deceased.
All right, let me stop you, Sam, because we're going to have to go to a quick break. But if you have children together and there was no will ever executed, then all of his property will go to his children and your children. So your three children will own that property, that house, that everything by operation of law. They preempt any siblings. So the siblings have no right to any of it. Even his separate property, it devolves to his children.
And all the expenses from the funeral come from his estate. Doesn't have to come from you.
So I didn't have to sell all of my stock and my 401k.
No, you can get reimbursed for all that. You can get reimbursed for all that.
Yeah.
It comes from his portion that goes to your kids.
Correct. It's a charge against the succession. So when you open the succession, you'll place the children. How old are the children?
Oh, now they're about 50 years old.
Yeah. So your three children will own it, and they're going to control what happens to the house and what happens to his assets because it belongs to them.
Are the children your children or is his prior children?
No, they're my children.
They're your children.
Three children together.
Them. Yeah, you said they were 15 all together, 37
them,
years.
But they're my children. Right, he raised them from the time they were 18 months.
But they're not, well then, okay.
You didn't have children together.
No.
Okay, that was the question I asked. Did y'all have children together? Okay, so no, they're not, yeah, so then you could be out of luck.
Yeah.
You could be out of luck, yeah, unfortunately.
Because when she said they were... The children were 50, and they were together 37 years old. And I did my math. I learned at De La Salle, and I said, that doesn't work.
Correct. No, I asked her. I thought her response was, I asked her that, you know, do you have children together?
No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to miss you.
Yeah, no,
no problem.
No problem. Yeah, his property then will, if
go
his
to,
parents
to
are deceased,
kids.
It will go, then it will go to the siblings and and the siblings' children if that sibling is not alive.
Okay, let's go to a break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers, all things legal. We'll be right back after this brief timeout. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. You know, we're a little talking about a partner from 37 years. Just in Louisiana, we're not the People's Republic of California. There's no common law marriage.
Right.
And so you have to either A, get married, or B, that's advice, guy with four daughters, or B, you would get your affairs in order, as you said.
Have a will prepared, you know, especially, you know, same-sex relationships, those types of long-term relationships, 10, 15 years, no children together or not children together. You need to prepare and make sure that your assets go where you want them to go.
There's a lot of unintended consequences
No question. And saying, oh, my sister will take care of you, well, that doesn't always work. I've seen that happen too many times, much like Sam, our caller. Okay, we're going to go to lightning round on some of these texts. In a case where someone moves to Louisiana as their new primary residence location and has a complete, well-designed set of estate planning documents from another state, for instance, Florida, please comment on the level of effort required to convert those documents to Louisiana law. Thank you. We really enjoy your show. I would start with reviewing the will if you have wills prepared. Louisiana has some little idiosyncrasies.
Most every revocable trust has a pour-over will.
Well, I don't know that it
was... Oh, our trust.
Well, I don't know that there's a trust involved with this. He just says estate planning document.
Okay.
Yeah, in this state. So, you know, you would start with a will. You want to make sure you have an independent executor appointed.
Which they probably don't have in other states.
Yeah. So, I mean, there's certain little idiosyncrasies that you don't... And it's not a real expensive thing to change, especially if you've got the plan...
Format.
Yeah, format it out. But I would have somebody review it just to be sure.
Absolutely.
Yes. Let's see. Both grandparents died 25 years ago. We did the estates. Three children died and did their estates. Now seven grandchildren find a piece of property in grandparents' names and want to sell it. Do we have to redo all estates, including children's? What you would do is amend the judgments of possession to include those properties and get that chain of title.
You'd file a petition to open up each succession, say we found a piece of property. We'd like to amend it according to what's happening right now, and that can be done. But it'll take a little time, but it can be done.
Yeah.
It's curative work is what they call it.
Exactly.
All right, next one.
Yeah, do I have a leg to stand on if I didn't get paid for a flood job in Baton Rouge? Friend on a handshake. The answer is yes. The fact that you don't have a written contract makes it a little more difficult to prove up how much the contract was supposed to be for. Typically, you'll have text messages back and forth or an email or something in writing confirming something. But no, you do have a leg to stand on. It's just the burden of proof is going to be a little harder.
And it leaves a lot more for interpretation.
Yes.
All right. What you got? What else you got?
Single person dies. No liquid assets whatsoever, but has $1 million value real estate and $80,000 in credit card debt to various bank. What should the kids do? Nothing. Ignore the statements as they start to become delinquent. Do you think the kids can just go to succession for the real estate? What realistically will the credit cards creditors?
What I would do is this: is open succession and attempt to negotiate out the credit card debt for a percentage of the amount that's due. Credit card companies understand it as a cost to coming into an estate and trying to prove up its debt. So a lot of times they may take a portion off, 80%, 70%, 40%, 20%. You don't know, but you can negotiate with the credit card companies to reduce the amount that's due, and they're usually receptive to that.
All right, real quickly, too, check the statements from those credit cards. If they're more than 3 years old, the last charge was more than 3 years ago.
Then it's prescribed. Or expired, as we say.
Yeah, and they actually have to file a lawsuit.
Notice the claim.
To interrupt that.
Right.
Let's see. How long do you have to wait if you file for divorce, filed late in 2016, and the other spouse is avoiding to be served at home or work to go to court?
Well, what you can do is this. You have to get them served in order to get the clock started. If you can't find them, you can appoint a curator, pay the extra money for the curator, and let him do it. So if he's not able... If he's avoiding service and you can't effectuate service, an option is to appoint a curator and let him deal with it.
Mm-hmm.
But it costs extra money also, so that's the big inhibiting factor in doing that.
Here we go, Doug. So you were reluctant to discuss our little off-air comment about withholding sex being qualifying for fault.
Yes.
Just heard on your broadcast, withholding sex qualifies for at-fault divorce. My husband served me with divorce papers last month. He has not touched me since 2016. I received a text meant for another woman, which was the beginning of the end of our marriage. Our children are adults, and we have no community property. How does this affect the divorce? What are my girls' rights? Thank you.
Here's the practical aspect of it. If you're at fault, you can't ask for final spousal support. You can't ask for permanent alimony, which is commonly known. So that's the practical effect. You have to be free from fault. So if that spouse is in a position where they can receive final spousal support or permanent alimony,
right,
what it used to be called, she can't do it if she's at fault.
So is that the only ramification for that?
That's the primary ramification for that.
For fault.
From a pragmatic standpoint.
From having fault in it. Yeah.
Okay, let's go to a final break. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico, your weekend lawyers. We'll be right back. Doug Sinceri, Albert Nico. Got a minute before we have to shut it down. What we got, Albert?
Text. Good job, guys. Another great show. Weekly listener from the beginning. Thank you, Texter.
Thank you, Mom.
Yeah, thank you, Mom. Right. Next text. Can a person be added to a will if all parties agree after the death of the person who drafted the will? Thank you. The answer to that is no. However,
you can do certain revocations.
That's right. If you depending on who that person is, you can renounce your portion or a certain part of your portion. If that person is a child of yours, because when you renounce in favor of that person. Or you can just accept the succession and donate a portion to that person. Hey. There may be some tax ramifications with a donation, but not typically not with accepting the succession.
All right. In about 15 seconds, what do you think about Anthony Davis?
It was just a disaster. He got bad advice from his agent, and now it's just real – It's a sad thing in the locker room. He's out there playing at half speed.
Yeah.
The players that want to play, it's a disaster.
Pelicans are going to be deconstructed and rebuilt in the next couple of years. There you go.
Again, I hope they start with the coach.
We're going to see you next week on All Things Legal, 8 o'clock next Sunday. Be good and be blessed. Have a wonderful week.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.